Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Ben, how's it going, man?
Hey, it's going well. Good to be back.
So let's talk about the story in the city baseball-wise, and that was the signing of Yasmani Grandal by a newly energized White Sox team. And apparently that is the first of many that they're ready to push in and begin the competitive phase of this rebuild.
I do think they have more moves to make if they want to catapult to this top of the division, which is doable, I think, because it's a vulnerable division. I think you certainly saw that with Cleveland this year, and I think the Twins could stand to take a step back. We often see that with teams that take a big leap like they did this year. So I think Grandal is a great start. If he's not the best catcher in baseball, he's probably the second best behind JT Realmuto. And I think, you know, the numbers sort of speak for themselves. Some of them do. The offensive numbers are strong. And this year he played a ton of games when he was with the Dodgers. They used to sit him and rest him sometimes. And this year with Milwaukee, he really proved that he could handle a heavier workload and that his bat could hold up under that strain. And, of course, he is probably the best receiving catcher, the best framing catcher in baseball. And so if you factor that into his value, he's a 4-5 win guy every year. And he's been incredibly consistent. And I think it's a great start because, you know, I think the Sox need pitching, certainly. But the best thing you can do other than sign a pitcher is sign the best receiving catcher in baseball who's going to get you extra strikes.
How much of a whip around has it been for you to, you know, as you cover free agency here over the next couple of months, to go with almost every free agent pitcher, well, you have to consider the White Sox in this? I mean, it's that's a very different place than White Sox fans were in just, you know, for the last 3-4 years.
Right. I mean, Grandal's the biggest contract that they've ever given out, right? Which is, you know, sort of sad, I guess, because it's not that huge a contract. Mm-hmm. But they've been in on guys, obviously. They've made offers, but not really competitive offers. And you had to question how serious are they about this, and are they really going to make major bids and be up there with the top bidders? But I think this is the time, right? Because they have a good young core. Some of those players really took steps forward this year. Others are on the way, you know, on the verge of the majors or coming back from injury. And this really seems like the time, given those young players, given the lack of contract commitments, and given just how winnable this division seems, this seems like the time to push in your chip. So I think it's a good sign that they've done it for at least one player here.
Yeah, I also think if it's a 31-year-old catcher, if we start looking at the aging curves and where the framing skills might drop off and just what naturally happens to human bodies, it now is the time. Like, you can't wait. You can't worry about the last 2 years, the back end of a Yasmani Grandal deal, when the first 2 years are going to be maximum production. All the more reason to go get a frontline starter, maybe another starter, and a corner outfielder. I mean, the money's there, and there's just you can't wait when the guy's 31.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, that's why he's not getting a 6- or 7-year deal. It's a 31-year-old catcher. That's always sort of scary. But he has a broad enough set of skills, I think, that he could withstand some decline and still be really valuable. You know, he's a switch hitter. He's got the framing skills, which are susceptible to aging, but not extremely so. We regularly see old catchers who are still pretty good at that skill. And he walks a ton. You know, he takes pitches. So I think a lot of that could really hold up as he ages. And as you've got these young guys, as you've got Kopech coming back, as you've got Madrigal coming up, and Luis Robert, and Dylan Cease, and Eloy Jimenez ready to take a step forward in his sophomore season, and then guys like Giolito and Anderson and Moncada, who already took big steps this year, you can kind of see it coming together. It's going to take another big free agent or two, I think, but you can start to dream on it at least, and it's been a while since you could do that, at least in the short-term future for the White Sox.
Talking with Ben Lindbergh of The Ringer. While we have you, Ben, go ahead and read up all of Ben's reviews on The Mandalorian. They're fantastic. The show's a lot of fun, too. I've really enjoyed it, but it's good stuff to read that Ben writes. Also read The MVP Machine. It's fantastic. And have taken a little bit of a listen on some of the Effectively Wilds that you guys have done about the scandal that has hit the Astros, the cheating and the sign stealing and the bang and the drum and all that kind of stuff. From from an analytical standpoint first, my worry about this whole cheating thing is that ownerships, front offices, everybody who makes decisions in this game now has to look at themselves in the mirror or look at their players and say, how good are we really? Because I refuse to believe that the Astros are the only team doing this. They're just the first to get caught.
Right. Well, not even necessarily the first to get caught, because, of course, the Red Sox were caught in that same season.
Fair point.
And the Red Sox, the Yankees were fined for some sort of shenanigans with their bullpen phones back then. So, yeah, I don't think it's necessarily a defense of the Astros that other teams are doing it or were doing it. I think that's probably the case. It doesn't necessarily excuse them, and we have the most evidence, certainly, to support that they were doing it and that they were doing it early and often that season. And so I think they deserve to be punished. They broke the rules. But, you know, if it becomes a question as this investigation proceeds, if teams are saying, well, we were only doing it because our opponents were doing it, and I'll tell you about this team and that team that were doing it, you wonder if this investigation, which started with the Astros, is going to expand to many other teams and whether that becomes an even bigger scandal for baseball. I think long term we have to figure out a way to come up with some technological substitute for old-fashioned sign stealing, because you've got video cameras everywhere, you've got screens everywhere. I think we need headsets or, you know, watches with some sort of haptic feedback or something that can just buzz and tell you what the sign is, because I don't know that you can ever really stop this arms race. It goes back to the beginning of baseball. So the technology is more sophisticated, but the desire to steal signs, that goes back, you know, 150 years almost.
That was my first thought, just outflank it with, you know, just get better technology and take all this out of it. And I think eventually baseball will have to do that, whether it likes it or not. Did you get any sense when you were reporting in depth on the Astros of the apparent cultural issues that exist, not just the cheating, but after the Brandon Taubman incident and their numerous missteps in how that was handled, issues of some kind of toxic hubris? Did you sense any of that?
Yeah, and we wrote about some of that in the book. Of course, that was before the Taubman incident, and, you know, we didn't know about the depths of the sign stealing, although the rumors were out there. But we talked to a lot of people who were in that front office or had left that front office and described it as, you know, kind of an unpleasant place to work. And a lot of people were upset about the Osuna trade. You know, at least one member, probably multiple members of that front office left either directly or indirectly as a result of their disagreement with that move. And there was so much secrecy and suspicion that I think it was not really a great culture. So you had other teams poaching Astros people, partly because that was the leading team, that was the team on the cutting edge, and of course teams want to catch up and they do that by hiring Astros people. But I think it was also partly that a lot of those people were not averse to leaving because, you know, the other teams kind of looked like greener pastures in some ways. And people told us, you know, these people don't care what anyone thinks of them, Luno and the owner, Jim Crane. They'll just do whatever they think will help them win. And that certainly has made the Astros into a great team. But I think they've taken that desire for wins and for surplus value to this really sort of toxic extreme where, you know, I think they've prioritized winning above all else, even when it comes to crossing these ethical boundaries.
Yeah, I mean, general baggery isn't a crime, at least not in Major League Baseball. And I guess that's the sense that I got around the Astros. And I just wonder, Ben, in reporting like you did on that team, I've heard stuff about the Astros, a lot about other teams. Should we have had a Mike Fiers earlier? You know, would it have been better for baseball if someone had spoken up, whether it's about the Astros or somebody else? And I mean, you know, from the sign-stealing perspective of things.
I think it probably would have been better if this had come up. I mean, obviously, if this had been revealed before the 2017 playoffs and the World Series, then maybe we could have disciplined then and made sure that they weren't doing that in that playoffs, because now that title is tainted, you know, however much you think that that helped them or not that season, clearly this is going to be part of that championship season for the rest of time. So I think if we had found out about this sooner, we could have nipped it in the bud, perhaps. And, you know, I think it really speaks to probably a pervasive problem in baseball, but certainly with the Astros, where I think part of the reason why this has come out, obviously, is that a lot of teams don't like them and people don't like them because of the way they operate. And there's some envy there and there's some justified resentment there. And frankly, it's surprising that we've found out about it this soon, really, that you even have a player from that team speaking up 2 years after the fact. I mean, normally these things come to light decades after the fact, if at all. So I think that speaks to the animosity that's out there toward the Astros, which, you know, again, doesn't mean they're the only teams doing this, but I think that could be part of why all of these details have come out as quickly as they have.
Talking with Ben Lindbergh of The Ringer and the Effectively Wild podcast here on the Bernstein and McKnight Show on Sports Radio 670 The Score. What do you think the outcome is going to be in the Chris Bryant service time grievance?
That's a fascinating one. I think we had all completely forgotten about it for a few years, right? We figured that it was just dismissed or that they'd reached some sort of settlement, and then all of a sudden it was back on the radar. So I guess the arbitration schedule is pretty forgiving. So there's no way to tell, really. I mean, I think he has a solid case just because of how egregious that service time manipulation was. I mean, it was so transparent. He was so clearly ready for the majors. And so there is a case, right? If he were able to get a year of service time, say, you know, returned back to him, taken away from the Cubs, and were eligible for free agency earlier, that could be a significant precedent-setting deal, you know, where other teams might think twice or three times about doing the same sort of thing that the Cubs did with Bryant. And, of course, that could color the talks as we enter the CBA negotiations, too, because that will, of course, be a point of contention. So it's a really significant case, and I don't know which way it will go, but I don't think it's out of the question that you could have a real precedent-setting decision here.
If you're making decisions for the Cubs this offseason, how much does 1 year of Chris Bryant versus 2 years of Chris Bryant change your plan?
Well, you know, he's been rumored to be someone who is on the block, along with players like Mookie Betts and Francisco Lindor, who you never really expect to be available. You know, it's not as if they could dump Bryant right now when he still has 2 years of control left and, you know, fool every other team when suddenly a year of service time is taken away. I think other teams are aware that this is hanging over his head and their head. So, you know, I don't know that you're going to get better value for him because of that, but coming off of the seasons he's coming off of, I know he was, you know, somewhat resurgent this year compared to last year, the injury plague season, but still not all the way back to the 6-7 win player he was in his best season. So I don't know that this is the time. I think if you're the Cubs, I mean, this is the team that just barely missed the playoffs, right? So you really need a player like Chris Bryant, and you better get something great back. I think that's the problem with Betts and Lindor and Bryant, these guys being on the market, is that it's pretty hard to trade a young superstar and get good value back, especially if you're a team that is trying to contend right away.
Which ball are we using next year?
I know you're
laughing, but I can't get past it. I won't let it go. It is so important. Literally, regular season ball, playoff ball, different balls, different sport. How can I run a team if I don't know what ball we're using?
I wish I knew. I wish we knew. I wish anyone knew. I'm not sure that Major League Baseball knows, which is perhaps the most disturbing part of it. So, you know, last year we had this lively ball, this drag-reduced ball that led to the most home runs ever. And then suddenly October rolls around, the calendar flips, and the ball goes back to what it was a few years before that. So does that mean that now we're going to be using this October ball, which maybe would send us back to, I don't know, 2015, 2016 in terms of the home run rate? Or will it just switch back again? There's just no way to tell. I think that, you know, one thing that could decide this is there is a panel that was convened, scientists and statisticians and physicists who are looking into why the ball is behaving as it is, and they're supposed to present their findings prior to spring training. So if that leaves enough time, if they can identify this is why the ball was behaving the way it was and here's what we can do to change it, then maybe we will see an actual change. And Rob Manfred has said that he will be transparent if MLB actually changes things. But, you know, again, it's hard to place much faith in that because the ball keeps changing. And, you know, unless you're a conspiracy theorist, it keeps changing despite the fact that MLB has a controlling interest in Rawlings and should have direct oversight of the manufacturing process. And, you know, either they're lying or they don't know why the ball is behaving the way it is. And neither one reflects well on Major League Baseball. And I would imagine that a lot of people in front offices have this question on their mind because, of course, it affects the kind of players you're going to go after and the things that you're going to instruct your players to do. So it's a strange state of uncertainty that we've never really seen in baseball, this kind of fluctuation from year to year and even month to month within a single season.
Always very sprightly and thought-provoking stuff with
Ben
Lindbergh. Thanks for joining us, Ben.
My pleasure.
That is Ben Lindbergh.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.